Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
What's up, everyone? Welcome back for a brand new edition of Collider Ladies Night Pre-Party. And I just can't even to put into words right now clearly how enthusiastic I am about having Hong Chau on this show right now. You are so, so good in the menu and so, so good in the whale. Everyone out there is going to hear your name a whole lot in the next couple of weeks and months, and I'm very much here for it.
Wow. Thank you for that introduction. I got to give you a
Oh, I'll take that. All right. So every Ladies Night conversation begins here. What was the movie, the performance, or personal experience that first made you say to yourself, I have to be an actor and nothing else?
Oh my gosh. You know, I still struggle with saying that I'm an actor. Sometimes I feel like I'm not. I never intended on being an actor. I went to school and studied film production. I intended on being on the other side of the camera. I thought maybe I would be an editor, something very solitary. And somehow I ended up in front of the camera. I think I fell into it. I started off doing little student films for my classmates when I was at BU. And I was a very introverted person. And I think the comments from the film professors sort of started planting little seeds and ideas in my head. I think there was this something surprising about seeing the girl who like would never raise her hand or speak in class suddenly be in this film and doing things and saying things. So I think I just kind of liked surprising people.
Oh, I have so many follow-up questions. I love talking about someone's experience in school because school is important for some, not for others. But in particular, there was one thing that like caught my eye while I was reading your Wikipedia page. It said that you started by pursuing creative writing at BU, but then opted to change your major to film studies. And it said you specifically did that because your parents wanted you to explore something more practical. At that time, what did they think was more practical about film studies?
Oh, they didn't think it was more practical. I thought it was more practical. That's how little I knew about the film industry and how difficult it is to get an actual job. I thought it would be easy to get a job in film and television afterwards. You know, I don't know. I thought it was like something like working at a TV repair shop or something like that. I thought I would learn like a physical, tangible skill that you could just, you know, hand somebody a resume and say, hey, I went to film school, hire me, and that would be it. I did not realize how long it would take and how unclear the path is for people who want to work in film. You know, maybe if you have friends or family members who can sort of give you like a shortcut or make that path a little easier for you. It's really difficult for most people. Most people don't end up working in film, the ones who go to film school.
Yeah, it's incredible. I went to one film school program and most of the people that I went with are still working in the industry. And I take such great pride in that because I know how talented they are and I know how difficult it can be. And they really fought for it and they did it.
Yeah, it's also interesting that a lot of successful people didn't go to film school. And I wonder what's going on there, because I wonder if it's just a sense of belief that it's going to be okay, that it's going to work out for you. And I don't know if that's a confidence of self or just like naivete, you know? Yeah, it's really interesting. But I like that you can come to film and not have had formal training. But I also love the people who are veteran theater actors who approach this in a very different way. I think there are things to learn from both sides.
That's why I always love bringing up school or choosing not to go to school, because there's so many different paths and techniques out there. Actually, speaking of different techniques, so I was reading that you studied in BU and then you studied acting more in New York City, but the piece I read didn't elaborate on that. So how did you figure out the right place to train and the right technique to study when you did that?
Well, I don't know who wrote this Wikipedia.
That's what Ladies Night is about, so we can fix it and make it more informative and accurate.
I didn't do training. I like I said, I was very introverted and I had a hard time just speaking. And I recognized that was a problem and that was going to hold me back in life. And so I started to take public speaking classes. Yeah, it was bad. And then that led me to taking improv classes and I hated it. Oh my gosh. Oh, Perry, when I tell you how much I hate it, I felt nauseous before every class and then sometimes afterwards too, because I was so petrified. And I just had a hard time spitting anything out of my mouth. It was that bad. And I do credit myself and I give myself a pat on the back for sticking with it, even though I felt so horrible every time. I just stuck with it. And I don't know if I was particularly funny or good, but for some reason, the improv teacher that I had in New York was really supportive and encouraging. And she told me to stick with it. And I don't know, she just saw something in me that I didn't see in myself yet. And so then that led me to just keep taking more little classes like that. So I never had like formal acting training per se. It was just more of like little exercises like that. And I met a sitcom television director and she for some reason told me that I should move to LA, and she gave me her number and told me to contact her and she would meet me for coffee and answer any questions if you know, I ever made it out there. And so I took that and ran with it.
Oh, that's such a good person to have encountered. So you moved to LA. When you first get out there and you get all the information that you can from her, what did you think was step one to starting a career as a working actor? And then ultimately, did you find that step worked, or did you discover something else that you would recommend to budding actors out there?
Oh, gosh. You know, I went to LA right before the writer's strike happened. So then everything shut down. So there was nothing going on for like a year and a half or something. And then just trying to get my footing. LA is a big town, you know, and I look how I look. And, you know, that doesn't really serve me in some ways. And so it just took a while. It took a really, really long time just to find people who wanted to buy what I was selling. You know, I was lucky to have an agent, but I was in the youth department of this agency for a really long time because nobody in the adult agency wanted to take me on. So I was just kind of trapped in the youth department of this agency for a while. And I was getting sent out on like Nickelodeon auditions, Disney shows for like little kids, like Hannah Montana type shows for a really long time. And I didn't book any of those. And so because I didn't book those, I thought, gosh, I must be bad. if I can't even book like a, you know, like a two line role on these little shows. So I think that, you know, it's all, when they say that it's based on luck, I think you have to, it's really who you end up aligning yourself with, you know. And I just wasn't with the right agency or people who like saw me, you know. I think they just saw like, oh, here's an Asian gal who can maybe play the barista or a waitress in something, you know, and that was about it. They didn't really see much more for me. And in some ways that sort of colors how you start to think about yourself, you know. But I've always loved strange sort of art house films. And so, you know, even though I wasn't, you know, booking anything, I was just feeding myself and keeping the dream alive by watching these really beautiful, strange films and just hoping that I would one day get to be in those types of things. So I don't want to get too LA about it, you know, but I think it's important for people to not be specific about what they want, but to keep going in the direction and keep trying to fill their lives with things that they genuinely enjoy and appreciate. And I think by laws of attraction that you know, it'll somehow come back to you, maybe not in the form that you were envisioning or that you wanted, but in some way it'll come into your life.
So you got kind of stuck in that agency where they didn't really see you and your talent and what you wanted to do. Who was the person that stepped into your life, maybe, that kind of started to bring in these auditions and opportunities that we see you excelling in now?
It's been a very organic process, and I'm happy for it, even though it took a while for me to get my acting career going. I was just struggling to get auditions for anything. I think I was auditioning once every few months. Every few months, like, yeah, I would get like one audition like every 3 months. And that in comparison to other people who were like auditioning several times a week, you know. So it was just even getting in my foot in the door, even getting into the room was a big hurdle for me. And it was just about trying to get one of those, land one of those jobs. And I think Treme was like a big deal for me, not only because it was so close to how I was brought up, so close to my own biography, but just that it was such a well-respected show and with like really great writing and great characters. So that didn't help me professionally per se, because again, it's like a show that not everybody watched. Even though The Wire was a very popular show, even The Wire took a couple of seasons to get going before people caught on to it. And I think because Treme was so different from The Wire, people just weren't interested in it. And so it just, you know, it didn't like, you know, shoot me out of a cannon the way that like I would have hoped. And so then a while passed, and finally I got an audition for Inherent Vice, and that, you know, fed me as a person, as an actor, to keep me going. But again, didn't do anything for me professionally because it was like a weird a weird art house movie that was, you know, this great commercial success. So again, I found myself just kind of struggling and aloof after I did Inherent Vice. But, you know, for me looking at it, I was like, gosh, I did Tremé, I did Inherent Vice, I worked on this Paul Thomas Anderson movie. Like, what's a girl got to do to get anywhere? And it took a while. It really took a while. And, you know, I was lucky in that the things that I got were for roles that they kind of had to see everybody for, like, meaning people who weren't like already famous, you know, like with my role on Tremé. I mean, it's like the Vietnamese daughter of a shrimper, like, you know, they kind of have to look at everybody's tape for that. And then again, for Inherent Vice, she was a sex worker. And so they were kind of open to seeing everybody. And it was funny, the casting director told me that she saw literally every single Asian actress from like a certain age range from both coasts. Like, she was going out and, like looking at non-actors and everything. And so I just felt like, oh, thank God, you know, that they were doing that, like really hitting, like pounding the pavement, looking for the non-obvious people or people who, you know, didn't have representation or didn't have a huge resume behind them. And again, the same thing with downsizing. So Inherent Vice was my first film, and then Downsizing was my second film. And that was also another experience where, or another opportunity where they were seeing everybody for that. After I had auditioned for Downsizing, I don't remember who it was. I don't know if it was my brother or like somebody else, like from my family, sent me something that they saw on the internet that was just like an open casting call. And it was like in Vietnam, you know, where they were just looking for non-actors. Like, it said specifically, you do not have to be an actor. You just have to talk about yourself on tape, and we'll contact you. And so that was just like, that was so hard for me to see, because it was just like, I'm an actor. I have been trying to be an actor and trying to get somewhere for like a decade now. And they're literally seeing like anybody, and anybody could get this job. So it was really hard, you know. But thankfully I did end up with the role, and it was things like that, that got my career going. I think people or the industry, first became aware of me because of Downsizing, because that was a big studio movie. We had a huge movie star in it, Matt Damon, so, and also Alexander Payne. So I think it was a movie that people paid attention to. And in that way, I got to be exposed to more.
I could talk to you all day. We only have 5 minutes left, and I have to touch on the menu. We're talking again for The Whale soon, so I'll at least file those questions away for next time. But just to tap into the menu a little before they kick me out of here. First, just to tease how Elsa kind of plays into this whole group there. What do you think that she thinks her greatest strength is, her greatest asset at the very beginning of the movie, but then also what ultimately is her greatest weakness, something that even though she exudes strength throughout the film could make her vulnerable amidst all the chaos that's unfolding?
I think her greatest strength, she thinks, is her loyalty and her reliability, because she does everything for Chef Slowik. He might be the headmaster and the leader and the face of that operation, but she's the one who keeps everything going. So I think that's her strength. Other people might say that that's a weakness, to be a good follower, you know, but where are leaders without followers, without devotees? And so, you know, you have, like, if you look at like an evangelical preacher, the only reason why he's there or she's there is because they've got this whole room full of people devoted to what their message is. So you can look at it either way.
All right, I'm going to try to squeeze in one more big one because it's a really unusual way you all got to film this movie. It's basically like an acting masterclass where you have all these exceptional actors around you and you're all mostly on set together for the entire shoot. So to highlight the variety of techniques out there, can you give me two other cast members of The Menu with two completely opposite approaches to the work where when you got to see them in the spotlight, you knew that you were going to have like an entire different experience, I guess, observing two different performers.
Oh my gosh. John Leguizamo is such an amazing improviser. He's just a life force. He's an amazing person to be around. He's so funny. He cannot sit still. He can't be quiet. He's just like always like on and just going. And it's super fun to be around him. He keeps the energy up on set. And it's really fun to be in a scene with him because Mark asked us to improvise because he was shooting 360. And so a lot of it is scripted, but a lot of the connecting bits have to be improvised. And it's just, you never know what you're going to get with John Leguizamo. And that's really fun because I don't think I'm a particularly good improviser, but it's fun to get to do it with John Leguizamo. And then the other highlight for me was Judith Light, who I've been a fan of since a child, but I've also seen her on stage and she's amazing. And she just has a different energy about her, you know, where it's just so committed and that you just lock into that energy. So, I mean, two wildly different energies there.
All right, they're making me leave. I have to say goodbye, but I'm going to say huge, huge, huge congratulations on The Menu. I'm glad we get to talk again for The Whale because there's so much more of your journey we haven't tapped into, but I know it took longer than it should have, but like you are here and you're excelling in a way that in every movie I see you in feels so uniquely you, and that makes me more excited than anything. So, congratulations.
Thank you, Perry. Thank you so much. I look forward to speaking with you.
Yes.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.